You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Wednesday, March 4, 2026. How soon is now? Short-term priorities emerge as global demand for natural gas heats up. Published by Jason Lindquist. The world is hungry for more natural gas. The newly reintroduced current policies scenario from the International Energy Agency, or the IEA, sees global demand rising from today's 400 BCF per day to about 475 BCF per day by 2050, roughly in line with other notable forecasts from the likes of BP and ExxonMobil. OPEC is even more bullish, predicting demand will reach 540 BCF per day by mid-century. And that doesn't even account the short-term pressures related to the military action against Iran. Any way you slice it, that's a lot of natural gas. So, where will it come from and what are the biggest issues facing the market? Those are among the major questions addressed at RBN's recent GasCon 2026 conference and the focus of today's RBN blog. Warning, today's blog includes some blatant plugs for a newly available replay of our event in Houston. As we did at the conference, let's start with a little background about where things stand today. Global natural gas production in 2024 was a little more than 400 BCF per day, with the U.S. accounting for about 110 BCF per day, or more than one quarter of total supplies. Canada's 20 BCF per day put total North American production at about 130 BCF per day. After the U.S., Russia is the next biggest producer, with the rest supplied by Australia, Qatar, and several other smaller producers within other OSHED, other OPEC and others. But these numbers don't tell the whole story because some countries, notably the US, Russia, Qatar and Australia, produce substantially more gas than they consume. In 2024, US demand for natural gas was 91 BCF per day, leaving 13 BCF per day available for export, primarily as LNG. The global market got a lot tighter on March 2 when Qatar halted LNG production after Iran struck two of its facilities in retaliation for US and Israeli airstrikes. Starting with Cheniere's Sabine Pass, 10 North American liquefaction and export terminals have come online since 2016 that today consume about 19 BCF per day of feed gas, mostly centered on the U.S. Gulf Coast, with a lot more on the way. In addition to the expansions of existing terminals, 8 more have taken a final investment decision, or FID, and are under construction. Post-FID projects at new and existing terminals could take an additional 14 BCF per day just 5 short years from now, rising to 15.7 BCF per day not long after that. And there are a host of other developers that have thrown their hat in the ring and are working to secure the permits and offtake agreements necessary to push their projects across the finish line, which could bump feed gas demand past 40 BCF per day or even 45 BCF per day somewhere down the line. US LNG has plenty of potential for future growth, but it's no sure thing. Policy choices can have a major impact on project development, and regulatory certainty is a key factor in the LNG industry's prospects, Talaga Darzi, a former Department of Energy, or DOE, official, said during a fireside chat with RBN President and CEO David Brazil. Gadarzi, who served as Acting Assistant Secretary and Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Office of Fossil Energy at the DOE, led initiatives that expanded U.S. LNG exports, including lifting the Biden administration's pause on new LNG export approvals, which she said slowed the industry's development. "The overpoliticization of the industry is just something that we can't do. Energy is not political," Gadarzi said, emphasizing that regulatory certainty was a key factor in the industry's future success. "Regulators and our policymakers shouldn't stand in the way of American progress." Those themes were expanded upon later in the morning by the conference's keynote speaker, Dan Brouillette, who served as Secretary of Energy during the first Trump administration. He said today's energy challenge is not a shortage of natural gas resources or lack of demand, but whether infrastructure, permitting systems and policies can keep up with rapidly expanding global energy needs. Speaking to a crowd of about 300 oil and gas leaders, he noted that in Washington, announcements are often treated as accomplishments, but gas doesn't move on press releases, it moves on pipelines. He stressed that pulling or delaying permits, regardless of the type of project, creates uncertainty that discourages investment. If the U.S. executes well, he said the current LNG buildout could cement American energy leadership for generations, but if the country stumbles, those projects could move elsewhere. The conversations shifted from policy and permitting in the morning to production and transportation in the afternoon. In the first of two panel discussions that highlighted the second half of the conference, Executives from two natural gas producers and an analytics expert said they were hopeful that natural gas will remain available to meet growing demand, but logistical and infrastructure challenges will shape how smoothly they can get gas from areas like the prolific Permian Basin to where it's needed, including LNG terminals in operation, solid orange diamond near Corpus Christi in Figure 3 below, or under development, striped diamonds along coast, and key trading hubs like Agua Dulce and Katy. All told, about 16 BCF per day of pipeline capacity from the Permian to and along the coast is expected to be added by 2029. Note: solid lines in Figure 3 show pipelines that are operational. Dashed lines show pipelines in development. The question this panel is going to get at is, will there be enough natural gas? And that depends on the price signals, the infrastructure build-out, and how quickly operators can respond, said Anders Hyde, Director of Fundamental and Quantitative Analytics at Expand Energy, the nation's largest natural gas producer. Also on the panel were James Pearson, Senior Consultant for Market Analysis at ConocoPhillips, and Brandon Myers, Head of Research at Novi Labs. Hyde and Pearson said they're using better strategies and technology to slash costs for new wells, but there's no silver bullet, I can't point to one specific thing. It's a series of continuous improvements, Hyde said. Myers cautioned against putting too much stake in dark horse gas plays at this point, because many of them can be quite expensive and challenging to capture gas efficiently and effectively. The second afternoon panel, this one focused on the midstream, noted that the fundamentals of the natural gas market have never been better, but that continued infrastructure improvements, better gas-electric coordination, and additional storage were critical to meeting supply and demand needs in the coming years. Seetal Modi, president of Natural Gas Pipelines at Kinder Morgan, said midstream developments will need to focus on three things in the coming years: unlocking supply, building new infrastructure, and debottlenecking problem areas, and increasing ways to reach the end-user market. If those challenges can be met, he said, big things are ahead. When I take a step back and reflect on the natural gas industry, the one thing that comes to mind for me is all gas, no brakes, he said. Danielle Bertoldi, a technical advisor at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, emphasized that better gas-electric coordination has become a much bigger priority, a lesson learned the hard way during 2021's Winter Storm Uri. What used to be very siloed sectors, the electric sector and the gas sector, we're at the point now where you can't really differentiate between the two industries. You have to consider them together if you want to maintain reliability for the U.S. grid, she said. Gas storage will become increasingly important for ensuring reliability and meeting supply and demand challenges, especially as U.S. LNG exports are poised to increase sharply in the next few years, Caliche Storage CEO Dave Marchese said. The U.S. saw a significant overbuild of natural gas storage in the early 2000s, but what for many years had been excess capacity is now being used and more capacity is needed, Marchese said. He said there are two main holdups to getting more facilities built: storage is more expensive to develop than it was a few years ago, and developers are looking for the long-term contracts, 10 or 15 years, necessary to secure financing, a sharp departure from the cheaper and much shorter contracts required in previous years. That's a lot of high-level information for us to fit into one blog, but there's a lot more detail that we haven't even begun to touch on here. GasCon 2026 put a spotlight on a number of important areas, including a regional demand overview by Jen Snyder, a partner at the Astra Energy Group, a complete rundown of North American LNG projects by RBN's Lindsay Schneider, a look at the expectations and challenges around data centers by RBN founder and executive chairman Rusty Brazil, North American natural gas supply trends and the effect of changing prices by Brandon Myers of Novi Labs, Amber McCullough of Measured Depth, and RBN's Jeremy Meyer, a rundown of major midstream developments by Noel Copeland, RBN's Director of GIS Services, and, at the end of the conference, an overview of what to expect from natural gas flows and prices by RBN President and CEO David Brazil. Today's blog aims to give you a sense of the breadth of content that was discussed at GasCon 2026, all of which is now available in an online format that includes 15 individual modules and nearly 7 hours of streaming video that you can watch at your own pace. This includes the keynote address, fireside chat, and panel discussions, with complete slide deck presentations from every presentation. How Soon Is Now was written by Johnny Marr and Morrissey and appears as the fifth song on side one of the Smiths' compilation album, Hatful of Hollow. Smiths guitarist Johnny Marr has said the song is possibly the Smiths' most enduring record. It's most people's favorite, I think. The song was originally released as a B-side of the single William, It Was Really Nothing in January 1985. The song was recorded at Jam Studio in London with John Porter producing. The unique tremolo guitar on the track was inspired by Bo Diddley and was achieved by running Mars Epiphone Casino guitar through four old Fender Twin Reverb amplifiers with the tremolo engaged and vibrating in time to the track. Released as a single in the UK in January 1985, it went to number 16 on the UK singles chart. Personnel on the record were Morrissey, vocals, Johnny Marr, guitar, Andy Rourke bass, and Mike Joyce, drums. Hatful of Hollow is a UK compilation album of various tracks from The Smiths recorded in 1983-84. Producers on the album included John Porter, Roger Pusey, Dale Buffin Griffin, and The Smiths. Released in the UK in November 1984, the album went to number 7 on the UK albums chart. Sire Records eventually released the album in the US in November 1993. Three charting singles were included on the LP. The Smiths were an English rock band formed in Manchester in 1982 by singer Morrissey, guitarist Johnny Marr, bassist Andy Rourke and drummer Mike Joyce. They released four studio albums, one live album, three EPs, 11 compilation albums and 25 singles. The band broke up in July 1987. As a solo artist, Morrissey has released 13 studio albums, two live albums, two EPs, 12 compilation albums and 67 singles. He continues to record and tour, and released a new single, Amazona, from his upcoming studio album, Makeup is a Lie, due for release in March. He is currently on tour in Europe. Johnny Marr is a successful solo artist, session musician, producer and songwriter. He has released four studio albums, three EPs, four live albums, four soundtrack albums, two compilation albums and 21 singles. He has collaborated with several artists, including The Pretenders, Brian Ferry, Talking Heads, and Pet Shop Boys. He joined Modest Mouse for a three-year period and continues to record and tour. He is currently on a solo tour in the US and begins a European tour in June. Andy Rourke and Mike Joyce continue to work as a rhythm section together and separately. They have worked with artists such as Sinead O'Connor, Suede, Buzzcocks, John Lydon, and Badly Drawn Boy.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.